Hello, welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the podcast for people who want to keep up with the headlines, but who are in no way self-professed politics wizards. It doesn't matter if you don't feel that you're well-versed on current affairs and all the terminology around it. It doesn't matter. I'm here to strip it all back and explain it properly for you so you feel somewhat invited to the conversation. I'm Julia Bell, and today we are going to get you caught up on this G7 meeting that's been happening in London, and then it's going to carry on in Cornwall next weekend. The G7, by the way, because one of you asked me about this over on Instagram, it stands for the Group of Seven, another inspired name in politics, the G7, and it's basically a club for rich democracies. That is literally the basis of this group, to be honest. That was the criteria. So, you know, we seven nations between us generate a massive chunk of the world's net wealth, and our leaders are all supposedly voted in a free and fair way. So kind of a smug club, actually, you might argue. And who are the seven members? Based on that description, you can probably guess, but the members of the G7 are the UK, the USA, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, and Japan. They're not the richest nations in the world. That's not the definition of the G7, because if that was it, then China would definitely be in there. And to be honest, they would knock the UK and Germany and France absolutely out of the water. Russia as well, a massive economy. And they used to be a member. They were invited to be a member in the 1990s, so it was the G8. But they were booted out again very shortly after, I think it was in 2014, when Russia annexed Crimea, basically invaded Crimea. And that was, you know, deeply condemned by the other members, and they were booted out. So it's not just about wealth. It's also about, do the other members approve of what you're up to? You know, are you perceived by the other members to be abiding by international laws? Blah, 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 blah. There's other things involved. Anyway, like I say, the G7 had this get-together here in the UK. Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, hosted the other finance ministers in the other G7 member states in London. So Rishi Sunak, you'll have heard his name loads during the pandemic because he's been the guy in charge of all of our money. It was his concept to roll out this furlough scheme and to handle the budget and all the rest of it. And his equivalents in the other G7 member states visited in London, and they sat around a table and agreed on, I think, quite a lot of stuff. I think quite a lot has come out of this meeting. I was on Five Live on Saturday night talking with Stephen Nolan. I tend to do it most weekends, where we talk about the front pages for the next day. We sort of get the front pages in early and we talk about the headlines. And this topic, this G7 thing with Rishi Sunak, was the headline on almost every publication over the weekend. So it's definitely important that we run through what happened, because in theory, I want to say in theory because we don't know for sure, this new plan that these finance ministers have come up with could mean that big tech companies like your Amazons, your Microsofts, your Facebooks could start paying their fair share of bloody taxes. And who is going to disagree with that?
Well, I'm delighted to announce that today, after years of discussion, G7 finance ministers have reached a historic agreement to reform the global tax system, to make it fit for the global digital age, but crucially to make sure that it's fair, so that the right companies pay the right tax in the right places. And that's a huge prize for British taxpayers.
So that was Rishi Sunak there, announcing the G7's new agreement, which we will dive into in lots of depth very shortly. But before I do, if these podcasts are helpful to you, please hit the subscribe button or hit the follow button if you're listening on Spotify. It really does help me out, and it means you never miss an episode. If you're a really big fan of the podcast and you find it really particularly helpful, give it a 5-star review and say something nice over on Apple Podcasts, because that means more people will listen and more people will discover me. And finally, if you like the idea of asking me questions for future episodes, the only way to do it is to follow me on social media and slide in my DMs. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at JuliaBell_X. And with all that out of the way, let's talk about the G7. So on Saturday, the 5th of June, the G7 finance ministers met in London, hosted by Rishi Sunak, like I said, and it looks like the big aim of the day was to agree to put a plan in action to stop these massive multinational companies from doing the classic thing of making shit tons of money trading in the likes of the UK and the US and Europe while paying next to no taxes in those countries. Because you know how it goes. They claim that their base is supposedly registered in Bermuda or some obscure tax haven in the Caribbean Sea, even though a massive portion of their customer base is like here in the UK, for example. And it's not just a cliche. It happens constantly. In fact, a recent example I read of this happening, I read it in The Guardian, was that an Irish subsidiary, this is going to piss you off, by the way, just a public service announcement, this is going to annoy you. An Irish subsidiary of Microsoft had paid £0, or €0, I should say, in corporation tax last year, even though it made £222 billion profit. A zero corporation tax. And the reason for that, guess where it was registered? Bermuda, which is a tax haven. And of course, you know, you can understand why this happens. It's totally legal for these companies to do it. And you can understand why it happens because the UK, for example, we've got a 19% corporation tax rate. So you compare that to a place where you basically don't have to pay any. No wonder they register themselves in these places. And it makes you mad. And especially knowing that this is completely legal, it pisses you off. The local bakery on your high street, the boutique clothing store that nearly went bust because of this pandemic, the coffee shop on the corner, all of these small business owners are paying more corporation tax than some of these massive tech giants, and it hurts my bones. I don't know about you. So, rant over. These G7 finance ministers who have spent the last 18 months borrowing up to their eyeballs to try to keep their countries afloat finally realise, oh my God, if we make these multinational companies pay taxes where they trade as well as where they're based, we, the countries that they're trading in, will start getting a lot of money. We'll start generating a lot of taxes, making money that we can use to recover from COVID-19. And you might be thinking, literally, why did it come to a pandemic to get to that conclusion? And if you're asking that question, to be honest, I couldn't agree more. This system feels bizarre. You almost can't believe it exists where, you know, you only have to pay taxes where you're supposedly registered. It kind of feels like it's set up for an old world where you would do most of the trading in the country that you're based. That seems like something from the 1800s where people couldn't get around very easily and there weren't digital services. In 2021, where most services seem like these days they are completely digital and the whole thing can be done online, you have companies like Facebook, which I heard last had more than 2.5 billion users. They have a presence in every corner of the globe. Suddenly, this old corporation tax system, it looks senseless. And to Sunak's credit, he did reference that on Saturday.
It is increasingly clear that in a complex, global, digital economy, we cannot continue to rely on a tax system that was largely designed in the 1920s.
So that was Rishi Sunak's voice speaking at the G7 finance ministers meeting about this long overdue change up of how the global tax system works. Sorry about the sound quality of that clip, by the way. It was a super echoey room that they were in. Now, the G7 finance leaders agreed on a second principle. So it's not just the thing about paying where you trade as well as where you're based. There was a second principle that they agreed on, and that was to commit to a minimum corporation tax rate collectively and vow to each other never to go below it. So all seven finance leaders agreed that they would keep the corporation tax rates in their countries at 15% or above from now on and never stoop below it. So what does that do? It basically means they can't undercut each other. You know, they can't say to big multinational companies, oh, come and plant your roots here and save loads of money because we won't charge you as much tax as the other guys. That's not doable because of this agreement. All seems sensible. And even the tech companies, don't worry, I will get into the criticisms because there are some. But for now, let's just keep it simple. Even the tech companies are seemingly on board. Nick Clegg, Facebook's vice president for global affairs, You'll know him because he used to be the Deputy Prime Minister of the UK. So random that he now works very high up at Facebook. But he tweeted about this, very supportive tweet on Saturday afternoon, saying, quote, "Facebook has long called for reform on the global tax rules, and we welcome the important progress made at the G7. Today's agreement is a significant first step towards certainty for business and strengthening public confidence in the global tax system." Very noble of you, Mr. Clegg, although I can't help but read that first sentence. Facebook has long called for reform of the global tax rules. I can't help but read that and think, if that is the case, why have you avoided registering all your Facebook bases in the highest taxing countries? You know, Facebook's European HQ is in Dublin, in Ireland, which has an incredibly low corporation tax rate, 12.5%, famously, much lower than ours in the UK, which is around 19%. So, I don't know, it's all well and good tweeting support for it, but you've clearly been enjoying the current system up until now. Let's just say that. And incidentally, Ireland, which is not a G7 country, they are not particularly happy about this idea.
We absolutely want to engage with President Biden and his team, but we do have really significant reservations regarding a global minimum effective tax rate that is at such a level that it means only certain countries and certain size economies can benefit from that rate. We have a really significant concern about that.
Do you envisage in, you know, 5 years' time, 10 years' time, there'll still be an Irish 12.5% corporate tax rate?
Yes, I do. I do anticipate that there will continue to be a place for a rate such as this and for low rates.
Irish Finance Minister Pascal Donoghue there, and you heard him say that he anticipates Ireland will still have a 12.5% corporate tax rate years from now. Again, I'll repeat, Ireland is not a G7 member, but they'll have watched the G7 countries all agree to this minimum 15% and commit to trying to roll it out across the world. If you've got an Irish finance minister saying, we ain't budging on 12.5%, to me, we're going to see trouble down the line. I think we're going to see a bit of a kerfuffle, I imagine. And we had the French finance minister saying to journalists over the weekend, other smaller countries are going to have to get, quote, on board. So I imagine we're going to see some sort of conflict about this later down the line, because one side of this is surely going to have to budge. And it's not just Ireland that the G7 will have to convince to commit to this concept. Like I said, the idea of this is to set a precedent in the hopes that everyone in the world is going to sign on to it and create a completely kind of equitable global tax system. I think it's ridiculously ambitious. I think a lot of people are kind of scoffing at that prospect because it's kind of rich for the wealthiest, most prosperous countries to turn around to some of the littler guys and say, come on, let's all have the same tax rates. And the littler guys are saying, well, we need to undercut you in order to compete with you. You know, that's what Ireland are saying. We have a smaller economy than you, so we have a lower tax rate to make ourselves enticing for multinational companies. That's how it works. Don't try and make out like we're being unfair. But yeah, that's the G7's aim. And the first step to rolling this out across the world will be to try to get the members of the G20 to sign on. And the G20 is, you guessed it, a group of 20 countries, a much bigger group, obviously, and its members, therefore, are much more diverse. So you've got Argentina in there, Brazil, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Mexico. These are places who aren't, what's a polite way of putting this? They're not on as much of a wavelength with the likes of the UK and France as the G7 members. And so when they have this summit in Venice in July, the G20 summit, I will be very intrigued to see how successful the G7 states are at trying to get this concept to take off. And just trying to convince other countries to sign on is not the only issue. There has been a fair amount of criticism and pushback, not just from Ireland, but from elsewhere. So let's run through some of that now. Okay, so yeah, like I say, Ireland not the only ones who aren't fans of these G7 commitments. Obviously, Ireland are saying that 15% minimum is way too high. They like to keep it at 12.5%. But other people are saying 15% is too low. You should aim much higher. And if you look at it, I don't know, if you look at it objectively, setting the minimum corporation tax rate in the G7 countries at 15% isn't that noble a commitment. I've already said to you that in the UK, ours is around 19%. And actually, all the other G7 members have corporation tax rates that are higher than 15%. So they're all committing to something that they already do. It's kind of like me saying to my parents, oh, I promise I won't smoke today, when I don't smoke. So I'm not sure how much praise that would get me by making a commitment that's incredibly easy to keep. And because of that, the biggest critics are saying, why are we celebrating this? This is not that big a deal. Why couldn't you have made it higher? Why couldn't you have charged corporations more so that at least there's some actionable change from the member state? So you have to actually do something rather than celebrate what you're already doing. Joe Biden, famously the US president, he went in wanting the minimum tax rate to be 21% that they agreed on in the G7. But clearly, somewhere in that meeting, compromises were made and it was dragged all the way down to 15%. Although it's not, it has to be 15%. It's just that's the lowest it can be. That's the agreement. So you can go as high as you like, but it can't go any lower than 15%. And I said I'd hit you with specific people who have criticised it. So let's give you the executive director of Oxfam, for example. They were particularly critical. So she said, quote, "It's absurd for the G7 to claim that it's overhauling a broken global tax system by setting up a minimum corporate tax rate that's similar to the soft rates charged by tax havens like Ireland, Switzerland and Singapore. They're setting the bar so low that companies can just step over it." So yeah, particularly damning statement from Oxfam's executive director, Gabriella Butcher. And she's not wrong. 15%, it is a low corporation tax rate, comparatively speaking. And you might be saying, well, what's the point then? Why are they celebrating this? But for the sake of balance, I will say this. The fact that the G7 are committing to a shared minimum rate at all is a massive step. It is a kind of historic, unprecedented thing. Take us as an example in the UK. Look at the past few years, or actually half a decade in the UK. What's been the obsession? Brexit. And what was Brexit all about? It was about taking back control, sole control, not letting any other nations or political bodies have any say over what we do with our money. And yet this concept does all of those things. It allows a political body outside of the UK to have a say over what we do with our money. Because this is where all the G7 members have agreed to a common denominator in corporate tax rates. It's very collaborative, it is restrictive, and it relinquishes the UK's agency to make up its own tax rules. And also bear in mind, again on this Brexit point, this concept of having a minimum tax rate that we all agree to with each other, what does that remind you of? The EU. That's so EU-y to have like a bunch of countries all agree to having the same rules when it comes to taxes. And this is kind of the EU's brainchild. They've wanted this for a long time. So here's our guy, Rishi Sunak, Mr. Tory party, not only signing the thing, but hosting the signing party in London. He's like, come over to ours and we'll have a party and we'll all sign this thing. So yes, there's people saying that this rate should be higher and it's not actually restrictive enough. But I think considering the political climate that we're in with the Tory party, it's kind of a big deal that we've signed up to this thing at all. Let's now talk about the G7 talks that will continue in Cornwall this coming weekend. And this time it's for Boris Johnson and the leaders rather than the sort of the finance folks. And Boris Johnson's kind of plate is going to be full. Lots of different topics to talk about. They're talking about donating jabs across the world. So developing countries who can't afford this stuff, how do we get jabs to them? They're going to be talking about pandemic recovery. They're going to be talking about climate change, all these pressing issues. And actually those three things, pandemic recovery, jab donation, and climate change are weirdly more related than you think. I'll come to that in a second. But the main focus that Boris Johnson is going to project in the lead up is about this vaccine donation, vaccine sharing thing. So his tagline is, let's get everyone jabbed in the world by the end of 2022. So by the end of next year, that's what he's going to go in, hoping to get an actionable plan from this G7 meeting in Cornwall. And it would be, according to him, quote, the single greatest feat in medical history. So that's what he's hoping to achieve. And he talks about, you know, we need to strike up the same attitude that they had in the recovery from the Second World War. And Winston Churchill is famously his kind of political idol. So I think he's going to be channeling a bit of that. And again, vaccinating the world, much like taxing the tech companies, it's a concept that just by the tagline alone, it's kind of hard not to jump on board with. Let's do that. Like most rational people are going to say, love the sound of that. But again, this topic, much like taxing the tech companies, it isn't that straightforward. It sounds great on a tagline, but there are nuanced opinions on it. You know me, I love nuance. And there's different arguments within it. So Tony Blair, actually, let's talk about Tony Blair. He's got a different approach to Boris Johnson, even though it falls under the same camp. He's saying, yes, we should, you know who Tony Blair is. He used to be the Labour leader and the Prime Minister of the UK, kind of a controversial figure, and he's been incredibly vocal throughout this entire pandemic. But he is on the same page insofar as let's vaccinate the world. But he's saying we also need to have a separate aim to vaccinate the vulnerable in the world by the end of this year. So 2022 is way too far off. Let's have a kind of primary aim, which is to vaccinate the vulnerable in the developing countries first. And so the G7 meeting next week in Cornwall, the governments are going to have to hopefully come to an agreement about how they balance their own debt and making sure that they can fund and pursue vaccinating the entire world, which, I mean, I'm sure it sounds quite expensive as a concept. And there will be this kind of pressure, because the UK is hosting the thing, that we set the tone and we make big commitments and we show that we're really, you know, if Boris Johnson is suggesting this, then he needs to have ideas, he needs to have budgets set aside, he needs to have a plan for how we do it. And also because our vaccine rollout is going so well, we're one of the quickest nations to get going on that, but we have loads of doses. We've got double the amount that we need. I read that in the Observer over the weekend. So we have enough doses of the vaccine to vaccinate our population twice over. And that means, again, we need to set the tone and say, right, look at all these doses we've got. We've got a way to roll these out across the world. And that brings me to the other sort of tricky thing that Boris Johnson might have to deal with. And I talked about the Observer. It was actually featured on the front page of the Sunday Observer this week. And it said, this is the headline, share vaccines or the climate deal will fail, rich countries are told. Isn't that interesting? So in theory, you could have developing countries who have had little or no access to vaccines turning around to countries like the UK and the other G7 members and saying, well, you can't make demands of us to help you with the environment without helping us with the pandemic. You've done nothing to help us get our population vaccinated. So why should we put ourselves through, you know, jumping through hoops to help you with the climate? So the UK needs to get the tone right, because we've been essentially hoarding vaccines. We've got too many vaccines. We don't need this many. And so if we waltz in to a summit with hundreds of other countries and say, oh, we need you to do more on the climate, we might get some backlash. And that is quite an interesting concept. It is kind of horrifying to think that our health and the environment are used as political poker chips at these summits. But that is kind of how international politics goes, I think. Okay, I feel like there's always more to talk about, but I can't go on for too long. Actually, let's just talk about one more thing before I finish, which is another sort of battle that Boris Johnson is fighting at the moment, which is essentially a rebellion within his own party. within the Conservative Party. Lots of Conservative MPs are really cross with the government's decision to cut foreign aid from the budget. This is quite a big deal, right? Because the government, when it makes a commitment to foreign aid, it passes it into a law. And Boris Johnson has U-turned on that commitment. For obvious reasons, citing hardship from the pandemic and the need to spend some of that money internally in the UK this year because of COVID. So it's looking like instead of 0.7% of the gross national income, we're going to be spending a bit more like 0.5% of the gross national income. Sounds like a fraction of a difference, but in real terms, that's billions of pounds less. Billions. And so a chunk of the Tory MPs, the Conservative MPs, including Theresa May, who's a really well-known figure because she used to be the Prime Minister, so it doesn't look good if she's really angry with the government. They've come out and said, this is a huge mistake. You have to reverse this. We have to spend 0.7%. That's as low as it can go, not least because of this G7 meeting. We can't be the ones hosting the thing who are spending the least of our gross national income on foreign aid. Don't make us look like the bad guys. And it's putting Boris Johnson in a bit of a bind. This is what Tom Tugendhat, who is a Tory MP, and he's essentially one of these rebels who's demanding that the government coughs up and pays 0.7%. He's also the chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee. And this is what he had to say about the whole thing.
Well, we're cautiously optimistic, but the reality is that what we're trying to do here is we're trying to make sure that Britain's foreign footprint, that global Britain, really means something. And I think that's absolutely vital to making sure we achieve our ambitions and our potential.
Tom Tugendhat there, MP, Tory MP and chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee. He said he's cautiously optimistic that Boris Johnson will change his mind. We shall see. And criticism has been coming from all over. In fact, we've been talking about ex-prime ministers today. Theresa May's unhappy about it. Tony Blair's been piping up about the vaccine stuff. And let's have another ex-prime minister, Gordon Brown. He's really unhappy with this foreign aid cut. He called it a life and death issue.
It's a life and death issue. We're actually deciding who lives and who dies. And you know, there's been an all-party consensus, all parties, for 25 years that we need 0.7%. We need to play our role in the world by being one of the leaders in aid. And really, this is not the right time to pull things away, because basically, this is when the poorest countries need help most.
So there you go. Three ex-prime ministers mentioned in one episode. I think that might be a record, and it just shows like how many people are pissed off with Boris Johnson. So a lot to look forward to in the coming days politically. And I think I can leave it there. I think that is enough headline-y stuff for you for now. If you found this helpful, you know what to do. Please become a patron. It really helps me to keep these podcasts going. The link to visit that is in the episode description. And if you click on that, then you can access lots of bonus material, opinion pieces and interviews and all the rest of it. Follow me on social media if you want to keep up with what I'm doing in between episodes. And you can also, like I say, DM me if you've got questions for future podcasts at JuliaBell_X. I am going to go and... what am I going to do? I'm going to watch the... shall I be honest with you for a sec? Once I've edited this, this is what I like to do. I like to talk about the real stuff, like G7 summits and corporate tax minimum standards. But then I like to watch The Real Housewives of New York with my mum. And The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Just generally anything that's on Bravo. So I think after I have edited this, I am going to drink a large glass of rosé and watch that with her. I hope you have a pleasant evening or day, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. Thank you for your support. Still so excited about this British Podcast Awards nomination. Can't tell you how fun that is. The awards show is not till July, but I don't know if I'm going to stop going on about it till then. And I will catch you in the next episode. All right, I love you lots. Goodbye.